on with amendments to Senate File 898. Senator Dibble, are you ready with one?
Another feel-good amendment, perhaps, Mr. Chair. I just got two amendments, Mr. Chair, passed in the Energy Committee. Two amendments to the energy bill. That's
great. We're feeling good.
Good patterns being established here in the room 123 today. So I'll offer the A14 amendment. That's the amendment that we spoke of during the break, Mr. Chair, on the economic development account being established in the Trunk Highway Fund. It was on the pilot project that MnDOT did with BEAD last year. Some projects available.
Certainly. And Senator Dibble moves the A14 amendment. Senator Dibble on the amendment.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And the A14 amendment comes out of a conversation with the department, who is very supportive of establishing this economic development initiative and appropriating some dollars to a special account and within the Trunk Highway Fund for that purpose. But what this seeks to do is just change it a little bit, Mr. Chair, so to give the commissioner some flexibility. So you'll see the up to language, up to $100 million. And then rather than the hard 50-50 split between rural and metro, that language is intended to start off with an equal division. But then if insufficient projects, qualifying projects, come in from either rural or metro, and there are remaining qualifying projects from one or the other, the remaining funds would be available to fund those projects. So we don't get into this situation where perhaps either rural or metro, it's easy to imagine either or, wouldn't fully prescribe the dollars set aside for them, and then but there is an oversubscription on the other side, and those dollars are just kind of hanging out there and can't be spent for good stuff. So it creates flexibility both within the rural, metro rural allocation, starting off on an even footing, and also gives – and the reason we're doing the up to, and I don't know if MnDOT's going to come to the table or not.
I think they should probably come in.
They're interested – people might have heard of this Better Roads program. It's kind of out there. It hasn't yet been rolled out or announced. Because the Trunk Highway, fund will be kind of spent down to its limits, basically, in this appropriation bill. Nothing would be left over for that, which is going to come – perhaps later, so it might be allow the commissioner to reserve some funds for that important highway maintenance initiative, highway rehab initiative that the commissioner is, I'm not stealing his thunder by announcing it in this public setting, but this is what's
I see Mr. Rudin is here. I'm not sure if amendment. Mr. Peterson is here or not, but so the members know us. Senator Dibble and I did talk about this just after the last committee hearing, and certainly the flexibility between the metro and the rural and the ability to use those funds a little more at the discretion, I don't have a problem with that, and we agreed to it. I would like to know, though, and have MnDOT on record, as far as the language goes, it says up to $100 million. I guess I would like a little bit of comfort in that they would not allocate $0 or $100 to that, and get a sense of what their thinking is as far as their plan for this economic development portion is, not just in the next year, but moving forward with it. So, Mr. Rudin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Eric Rudin with MnDOT Government Affairs. And I think it's important to just note that although the Better Roads program has been discussed and is still under consideration, the governor has not actually proposed anything specific yet in this area. Having said that, though, as you're aware, we have had these economic development interchange initiatives in the last several years, and those funds have been split between Greater Minnesota and the metro area, and it's been a very successful program. We are hoping to be able to do something along these lines. As Senator Dibble indicated, if the Better Roads program proceeds, we would like some flexibility because This $100 million, our understanding, would just come from the fund balance, and that is money that we were anticipating to use for the Better Roads program. So, you know, I think without giving a definitive answer at this point, it's definitely something that the department is interested in. The flexibility would allow us to protect the fund balance policy, the debt management policy that the department has come up with. So I think there is a commitment from the department that if legislation is enacted this session, that we would certainly proceed with some level of funding for this program.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you. I do have, one comment. I think flexibility is important, and because you're supporting this, I think I would as well. But I would be disappointed if every year it went to metro versus rural. So in the name of flexibility, I think it's good, but that, I'm just expressing some concern.
And your concerns are shared, and just having a discussion here about the possibility of adding some language requiring some reporting on it so that whether it's an agreement with MnDOT that we will be informed as to the progress of the rural projects and the metro projects, what's being funded, if more is going from the metro to the rural. Certainly the rural members would want to know that. And Senator Rust?
It's only been done one time. Oh, it's only been done as a pilot.
Senator Rust, would you swing your microphone just so the record?
Well, it was a good thing you didn't hear me because it was a silly comment.
Like Senator Dibble said, I think we've only had this one other
year. One year.
So,
Mr. Chair, for the record, also the previous appropriations for the economic development programs, I believe, have had a 50% rural, 50% metro requirement associated in the legislation.
And Mr. Rudin, did they have that provision in there that if it wasn't spent in one area, it could be spent in the other? Or was there just a fixed dollar amount?
I believe it was a fixed dollar amount. I could either have Senate Counsel check for us, or I could certainly check and get back to you.
If you would get back to us on that, I think that would be fine. We're going to take this at face value, believe that the spirit of what we intend to do here will be followed, and I'm more than willing to trust that in the end we will get all of the information we need, and that MnDOT will appropriate significant money to this, because there is a big need for this out there. And as we look to expand economic development and jobs, some of these small programs that don't really fit the ATP process, the STIP process, and all of that, we need to be able to respond to those needs as economic development opportunities come forward, not just in the rural but in the metro area too. So, Senator Lilly?
Mr. Chair, the Better Roads project, is that what we're referring to here? No. Okay, so that is a separate conversation about than what's happened. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I don't know if we want to work on language now. We can. We can receive my commitment to both, make sure that we are kind of in the long term sharing in these dollars equally between rural and metro. I agree. It's quite conceivable that, Senator Gazelka, that more will come in, rural. And Senator Gimsey has talked about the many, many projects that are connected to economic development in rural.
So I think it protects both of us, you know, both metro and rural interests. And the reporting is absolutely the right way to go, too, always, I think, with MnDOT or any agency that we exercise oversight so that we know what exactly is happening.
And I guess I'm comfortable moving forward with the amendment. We'll work between here and finances and what I'm assuming a conference committee process to clarify some of that, and we'll work with staff to get that language finished up. Senator Rest?
Mr. Chairman, assuming that we finish our work on this bill this evening or this afternoon, I hope, there was some communication from the tax committee that your bill would be in the tax committee possibly tomorrow if it was reported out rather than going to finance, or is it going to finance and then taxes?
We're scheduled for the tax committee tomorrow afternoon, and then it'll go to finance from there.
After that, it would go
to finance.
Finance. Correct. So if there were things that you wanted changed there, reflecting this agreement, I'm on the tax committee. I'd be happy to.
Appreciate that, Senator Rust. So, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some concerns about this amendment. I was really excited about this portion of the bill. I think it gives us an opportunity to make a statement here at the legislature that economic development and business in Minnesota is our priority right now. I have concerns whether this will be funded, and I think we set a tone in this room right now that jobs are a priority. And I was really pleased with the initial language and the way it came out. I hesitate because if this doesn't get funded, I mean, how beneficial is this language really going to be?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Two things. Appreciate that Senator Cruz and I completely agree because I think this initiative is important. But I just want to say for the record, repeat Mr. Rudin's comments that there is a commitment to fund this. Agencies don't come forward to the table and make commitments without following through on those. Number one. Number two, the commissioner, I've spoken with the commissioner directly about this initiative. I've spoken with the other legislative liaison staff. And there's also the example of how the department has already embarked down this path on their own initiative, working with DEED, funding some really interesting projects. So, it's something that comes out of the agency and something that the commissioner, I think, even in his presentation to us, spoke quite a bit about connecting transportation and our infrastructure investments to our economic development aspirations. So I have no doubt about MnDOT's commitment, wholehearted commitment to doing this. But they're also saying is if we commit the entire $100 million, we very well may not be able to do this other, I think, but we will all agree once we see it, very important initiative around, better roads, really jumping ahead and getting ahead of the ball game on some of the major rehab work that we need to do on our highway systems throughout the state. And if Senator Howe is here, he'd know what we're, because, the southeast corner is like the most notorious corner of the state for all of the rehab that needs to be done. And that's frankly about economic development, because that's about the vitality and usability of an important interconnected roadway system. And it also, if we jump ahead on these significant rehab needs that we have throughout the state on our trunk highways, we forego huge liabilities that we expose the trunk highway fund to in the future, because instead of doing routine rehab, we'll be doing major reconstruction. And it gets so bad at some point, if we don't jump ahead of the game, that we expose our entire credit rating, our general obligation bond rating. So our entire, Senator Senjum would be interested in that, our entire credit rating would decrease, and our entire bonding program would become that much more expensive. So I think we have the commitment. I really appreciate your comments. They're good to have on the record so that we can hold MnDOT to substantially funding. And my commitment to Senator Gimsey is we'll nail this down a little more tight as we move along.
Very good. Any other comments? Senator Dibble has moved the A14 amendment. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No. No.
Motion carries. Senator Dibble.
All right, I'm on a roll this chair.
Yes, you are.
Now I really am. A20, I'd like to offer the A20 amendment, Mr. Chair. As it's coming around, I'll just...
Senator Dibble moves the A20 amendment to the amendment. Senator Dibble.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, the A20 is the governor's budget bill for transportation, which is almost in every way identical to your bill, Mr. Chair, with a couple of exceptions.
almost in every way.
Which you might be interested in. You'll notice that Greater Minnesota Transit... does not, and that's, well, I actually marked it up on a previous version here, so council may have to help me find things, but so Greater Minnesota Transit is fully funded at its general fund base. That's on page 3, about line 13-ish or so. On page 4, Senator Sharon's not here, is she? Let's do that. On line 4.10, we'll see funding out of the Trunk Highway Fund for $500,000 for a Center for Excellence in Rural Safety. And I know that we're not going to pursue that separately, Mr. Chair, but that is in this bill. It's an idea that's worth at least visiting about for about 30 seconds as we present this. And if Senator Sharon comes in, I'll have her talk about it. But that's doing rural safety initiative with the assistance of the University of Minnesota and some interesting initiatives that they got there. It does fund the targeted group business program. It's contingent on whether or not a larger policy passes at some point in the future that's similar to your bill, Mr. Chair. And then on page 5, again, more support for the targeted group business work that we're doing, that the agency intends to do. Just making sure that my two different versions are tracking with each other. Everything else is the same on the next few pages around the MnDOT program for roads and local roads and freight, including that small cut we took to the commercial vehicle program because we're not doing that one safety initiative anymore. Speeding ahead to page 11, Metropolitan Council, significantly different from your bill, perhaps, fully funds the general fund base for bus transit and rail operations. And then, Mr. Chair, we would jump into the rest of the appropriations are the same as your bill, which we've been over. We jump into Article 2, which are the policy provisions. And what we picked up, Mr. Chair, is the economic development account that we just spoke about. This formula distribution to towns and how that's construed relative to the property tax base versus the amount from the previous year, changing that at the request of the townships. The estimate of resources available to local roads, moving that up to October 31st. That was the agency initiative. We had the Gold Star, the Ingebrigtsen bill. Now this is a license plate, Ingebrigtsen, but it also has the Senator Sharon language that says for purposes of this section eligibility may be established by birth or adoption. Moving along, we pick up the additional fees for the deputy registrars. Those are the next few pages.
And then we have the Rural Road Safety Task Force, which we funded earlier in the bill at $500,000. I turn it over to Senator Sharon for just 1 second so she can visit about that. And I think we'll
might see more on that later.
Certainly, and maybe what we should do first is have Ms. Berzovsky. Is there anything else in there that I assume that you probably wrote this and know the ins and outs of it? The differences.
We have the extension of the technology surcharge too, Mr. Chair. My apologies there too.
Okay. Then we'll have Senator.
Oh, Mr. Chair and members, I apologize. I had to do a quick redo of this, and so Senator Dribble had to work off an old version. But I think the only thing that that was picked up into the governor's bill that Senator Dribble didn't mention is on 610, and that is the 0.5% of federal appropriations as grants to the OICs, and that is out of the A1 amendment. So it's familiar language, but it was not in the governor's bill.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Dibble?
I intended, and if I didn't give direction to... Oh, it is here, Mr. Chair. The Office of Passenger Rail is funded as well. You see that on page 3.25, or line 3.25 on page 3.
Senator Sharon, would you like to speak to the Rural Safety Task Force?
Yes, I would. Thank you very much. The first portion of the bill is the appropriation, but I think for a broader explanation, it is easier for the members of the committee to look at page 21. Page 21 really describes the membership of the Minnesota Rural Road Safety Task Force. The department has... And I think we all are very supportive of the zero death program that the Minnesota Department of Transportation is engaging in, a high priority towards safety. A lot of initiatives that have really moved that goal forward and reduced the number of deaths on our highways. This is a proposal that really blends well with what the Minnesota Department of Transportation already has identified as a major initiative. This is one that would marry, so to speak, or connect or cause an interplay, a deliberate interplay between the Minnesota Department of Transportation and the Center for Excellence in Rural Safety at the Hubert Humphrey School of Public Affairs. There are some enormous resources available to the Department of Transportation through the Center for Excellence in Rural Safety that should be brought into the planning process for addressing the issues of public safety on our roads. So this proposal encourages the Department of Transportation to engage very deliberately with the Center for Excellence in Rural Safety. And furthermore, it really defines a Rural Road Safety Task Force and defines the memberships of that committee and what the functions of the committee would be in terms of working on analyzing and assessing those aspects of transportation that might be contributing to deaths on our roads. And it can range not only to the construction or the engineering of a project itself, but such things as whether or not the system that... the communication system that allows public safety to communicate with one another, to bring emergency vehicles to the site, other kinds of behavioral issues that people may be engaged in related to safety, to the use of seat belts, or being distracted because of fatigue, or being distracted because of the use of cell phones, all of the elements that play besides the design and the construction of a roadway, putting those things together, understanding that complex group of stimuli that contribute to deaths on our highways and creating proposals for how to target those stimuli and reduce them on many levels. And that's what the proposal is.
Thank you, Senator Sharon. And I have had some discussions about this proposal. I actually saw it in bill form, I believe. Not sure. Did you drop the bill?
Yes.
Does it have a bill
yes.
number? In my discussions concerning this, and you know, nobody wants to vote against rural safety for our roads and the task force, but in my discussions on this, I have certainly some concerns about the breadth of the of what will be studied in it, and whether it is the task force will be studying issues that we believe are important, number one, on a personal level or even as a transportation committee, and secondly, will this fit, and has this been vetted through the Commissioner Sorrell, and in how it will fit with the direction that he is headed with towards zero deaths. And when I did discuss this with one of the advocates of it, I guess I wanted to hear from the commissioner and hear from the department whether this actually fits, because we are making tremendous progress in the state of Minnesota bringing down the traffic deaths in the state of Minnesota. This year we are at a record low, and I wouldn't want to put in another task force that would have the expectations that every one of their recommendations on, you know, some issues, certainly a helmet law would in the proposal that I saw, that was going to be one of the suggested areas that they would be looking at. Now, I personally don't want to have that discussion. I believe people should be free to wear a helmet on a motorcycle if they want to. So, you know, there were a lot of other initiatives that were in this that, you know, for philosophical reasons or whatever it might be, we may want to explore that as bills possibly before this committee. But to have a task force out there that is setting policy that we have no, and with the expectation that legislation will probably be adopted because of the exploration, just seems to me to be a little bit more than where we are headed currently under the very adept hands of Commissioner Sorrell and the toward zero death concept. That doesn't bring in all of those types of factors. So I have opted in my dialogue with the people that I've talked to about this to let's refine it, let's get the commissioner on board, make sure that it melds well with the department and their goals, and that that we can have further discussions about that. And so the people I've been talking to are committed to doing that, and I, you know, I guess I would like more information on how this fits the entire picture as far as rural road safety. Senator Sharon?
Thank you. I think that I did have a meeting on this with the department, and I see that Mr. Peterson is here, and I certainly would invite him to come up and talk about what the department is doing now and what their plan is in terms of the work group, if that would be okay with you, Mr. Chair. And I also would indicate to you that your concerns about those specific issues, the language about that has been removed from this proposal, that the areas of concern that you expressed earlier when you, I think you were expressing those with Senator Dibble. So those things have been removed from here. And then finally, I would say that this task force simply will prepare a preliminary report. It doesn't initiate any or have the authority to initiate any regulations. So it's, if you notice on page 23, the report, the task force shall submit a preliminary report to the legislature and a final report by January 15th, 2013.
Senator
proposed
Sharon,
legislation. It's proposed legislation.
I understand that, that. I see that some of the more offensive things, like sting operations and that type of thing, that they were going to investigate out on our rural roads, that may, you know, in some people's eyes have make a difference, have been taken out of here, but still the direction probably that this will go is along those lines. And I'm not satisfied, even with this current language, that there won't be an expectation that the recommendations will be reinforcing potential legislation that comes down the road. And so I do have a significant amount of trouble with this approach, along with the $500,000 taken out of the Trunk Highway Fund. That would also be a concern. But Mr. Peterson, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Peterson from MnDOT. And as Senator Sharon said, we have had some conversations with the proponents of this particular provision over the last week or so, trying to figure out how to move forward. And as you know, our Towards Zero Death initiative that MnDOT and the Department of Public Safety are the primary sponsors of has had some fairly substantial success in reducing the fatality rate on Minnesota roads over the last several years. And we actually have a particular focus on rural road safety because that is a part of the state where crashes tend to be more severe and actually have a higher ratio of fatalities to total crashes than in the metropolitan area. So we are supportive of the center's efforts to explore ways to improve rural road safety, but we do have some questions about how the effort that is proposed in this language would fit within the overall umbrella of the Towards Zero Death framework. And so those are the issues that we would like to continue discussing with the proponents of this legislation. And we do think that there may be a role for the Center for Excellence in Rural Safety to work with the Towards Zero Death program. But we're, you know, those talks are really kind of in the beginning stages at this point, I would say.
Senator Scher?
Yes, thank you. I appreciate your being willing to come and talk about that. The unique, I don't know if this is unique, but I am asking, is it unique to this? What I think is very interesting about this proposal is the comprehensive nature of it, to take a look at a multifaceted set of stimuli, I call them, that contribute to the deaths on highways, that goes beyond the engineering and design, but also behavioral components, so that we can take a look at how whether or not we want to legislate it or not, what it is that's contributing to deaths on the highway, and what of those things we want to use legislative influence to try to impact the outcome. What of the initiative that you have in that regard is either beyond or not as broad as the concepts in this bill that was introduced? Yeah, you know, what are the differences in terms of what your focus might be, and what is your reaction to? I know that there may be an issue of, I don't know if there's an issue of, you know, control here of who's going to control this, but certainly the university Center for Excellence in Rural Safety has enormous resources that we go way past what we're able to do in terms of resources for the Department of Transportation when you're underfunded for everything you need to do anyway. So I would be surprised if there was resistance to try to expand the capacity of the department to understand what we can do to reduce deaths on the roadways by this offer from the public affairs at the University of Minnesota to partner with the state about this. So there's two questions, partnering, and is the scope of this less or greater than what it is that you would do without it?
Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sharon, with reference to the scope, I guess I'm not fully informed on all the activities that are currently underway in these two areas, but I would say that the Towards Zero Death effort consists of the four E's: education, enforcement, emergency medical response, and engineering. And clearly enforcement and education are two of the components that are reflective of the language that's in this amendment. And so, and the education to be to help people understand the impacts of certain types of behavior when they're behind the wheel of a vehicle. And so to that extent, those aspects of the legislation are consistent with with the efforts of the Towards Zero Death Task Force. I think the issue comes down to, as you mentioned, you know, resources are precious, and we want to make sure that any effort that we make and any money that we spend is focused in the areas that we think will be most effective at the time. And I don't think that there's any necessarily any disagreement about these types of activities that are itemized in the bill. It's more to the point of, you know, what's the right order in which to undertake things and where to invest our money and time and energy at different points in time and how to integrate the activities of the center with the activities of the Towards Zero Death Task Force and the activities that they're sponsoring and working on. And you're correct, the center does have a lot of expertise, some great resources. Our people speak highly of the work that they have done. And so it's not a reflection on the quality of the input that they can bring to the effort, but rather I think just trying to work out the details on how these right now what are somewhat different elements can be better integrated and then working forward from there.
Senator DeGryff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Peterson, I just to speak briefly, and I have two comments. First of all, to speak briefly on this, I guess I trust that MnDOT is doing a good job and will continue to do a good job working toward the zero death goal that we all adhere to. And I personally would speak out against forming a new commission that that would have to study this when I believe you guys are doing a pretty good job already. My second comment wants to give my condolences to the MnDOT family. Michael Strzok was killed in an accident. He lives about 10 miles from my home, lives in my district, and my condolences to your whole family. And to his mother, which is also a part of your MnDOT family, I understand. I knew his wife. I know his wife. And I understand he left behind two little children. So my condolences.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for those comments. Gray, thank you.
I've got Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the comments by Mr. Peterson and look forward to more conversations with MnDOT about this idea. You, of course, are very familiar with the Center for Excellence in Rural Safety and Mr. Munich's work. It's top-notch, nation-leading work that he's done in Minnesota, both on rural safety and a number of other very important initiatives that we've undertaken in the state that really have been a national model in a lot of areas. Members, if you're not familiar with the Center for Excellence in Rural Safety over at the Humphrey Center, should go over and take a look at what they're doing. And you can even go online and see the saferoadmaps.org. Which is a compilation of all the data that you need, any conceivable data attached to fatalities on rural roads nationally. And so it's a huge repository of a wealth of data it's a really, really rich research resource. I just wanted to conclude by saying that, this is an important idea. We know that the level of fatalities per capita that rural areas experience are a measure of degree higher than in the metro area. So there are issues unique. And Towards Zero Death has done a great job, and they've done a great job in rural and metro, but a lot of really good work in the metro. So I'm not a rural guy. Maybe I'm happy about that. But really shining a focus on some of this rural work, you know, I don't know what the reason is, but, you know, probably has something to do with the much larger, longer distances that are driven and the fact that the roads are narrower, and if you fall off the road, worse things are going to happen to you. And so getting a handle on that is important. I just wanted to respond quickly to Mr. Chair. I agree there may be some things in the original draft of the bill that worthy of a little twitch. But I didn't see sting operations. I didn't see motorcycle helmets. I saw a mention of motorcycles. I saw a mention of creative ways of enforcing speed, but it wasn't stings, it wasn't motorcycle helmets, and didn't go down path. And I'll also say Towards Zero Death has put some controversial issues in front of us as a legislature. We should be okay with dealing with that. Part of the analysis, too, though, is this is controversial, and this is the political reality of this policy approach, and you just need to know about that. And I think that's a product that we would get from a center or an effort like this. But, it's not ready for the prime time. This is all very compact. These deadlines are compact, but
appreciate the opportunity to get the idea out here, out in the open.
Certainly, and, you know, the spirit of the initiative is well based. You know, we all want to reduce deaths, certainly, and you know, again, 2 weeks for a project like this with very little dialogue with the department and their workings and all of that just doesn't give you a level of comfort that it is ready for prime Absolutely. Time at this point in time. So, I have Senator Sharon first.
Thank you. The other, before we leave this, I would like to say that the concern that my fellow senator has about duplicative or, you know, bringing another level on top of another is a major concern of mine, and it's why really we should be paying attention to the fact that this center exists. It has all sorts of resources, and that we do not necessarily have to, because it has to be our own, not engage in a relationship with the university that may already have done significant amounts of work and data collection and analysis in order to provide the basis for decision making. So that's exactly why we need to more often and more frequently partner with our university that we are also funding and to not to duplicate. And but the final thing I'd like to ask of Scott Peterson before he leaves, if you don't mind, is, you know, the membership of this work group brings in certain perspectives as well. In your work efforts, are you all in-house people, or are you, who is on the work group that's attempting to create a better product in terms of initiatives or recommended legislation towards zero deaths? And is there something there that you can have in your conversations, too, about how you are involving people in the process of problem solving?
Mr. Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Sharon. I can get you a list of the people that are on the Towards Zero Death Task Force, and it's people from a wide range of disciplines. MnDOT, I guess, specializes in the engineering aspect of the 4Es, but we also deal with people in the health field, obviously people in public safety, people that deal with education, to try and find different ways to make an impact on the crash rate, and in particular the fatal crash rate. And so it is a broader-based effort than just internal people. And I think that's one of the more redeeming and more effective qualities of the effort itself, is the fact that we have reached out beyond what MnDOT had traditionally applied as resolutions to safety issues, which is to change the roadway, you know, do some engineering and construction and try to fix things, when in fact a lot of crashes are caused by other factors, and certainly the quality of our emergency medical response is a key factor in keeping people alive after a crash. So
thank you for your indulgence.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to say, as a way of showing direct support for the governor's bill, I'd like to have a roll call on Senator Dibble's amendment.
There will be a roll call. Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I can just make a comment about, I'm a rural guy and I'm an insurance guy, so I see a lot of policies and situations, and I think the goal is good of reducing deaths. And as we have changed alcohol consumption for some, we've moved to from approximately 50% down to 30-something percent of fatalities are related to alcohol. But frankly, unless people stop drinking and driving, there's a big chunk that we're not going to change. There's still roughly 10% of the people that don't use seatbelts, and if they don't use seatbelts, they're going to die. And then the other issue that stood out to me is in rural, I mean, there's great distances sometimes between places where people are going to get medical care quickly, and it's just going to be a fact of life. So some of these things I don't think we're going to ever change unless people's behavior change and we have more medical facilities or situations where we can get to people quicker.
Thank you for your comments, Senator Gazalka. Okay. I guess maybe to wrap this up a little bit on the amendment, Senator Dibble, I appreciate the similarities that are in this bill. When we do sit down and compare it to my bill, there are a lot of very good common areas that we do have. My concern with it would be that it does take us out of balance as far as our budget targets go, and our general fund target for reductions, and that does trouble me significantly. As you know, we have been very thoughtful in our approach, I believe, in how we have managed those, and we have tried to ensure that our budget targets are not a moving target, but that they are a stable target that we have reached, and that we'll be able to move forward, and that the organizations that are affected will have options for making up for the reductions that they're going to see. So I can't support your amendment, and a roll call has been requested. A roll call will be, we will have a roll call. Is there any other discussion on the A20 amendment? Seeing none, we'll have a roll call.
Senator Gimsey?
No.
Senator DeCryf?
No.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Howell? Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Lilly?
No.
Senator Lurie?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
No.
Senator Reinhart? Senator Rest?
Yes. Yes.
Excuse me. Senator Senjum?
No.
Senator Sharon?
Yes.
Senator Sieben?
Yes.
Senator Wolf?
No.
There being five yeses, or eight yeses and five noes, the motion does not prevail.
It's the other way around.
The other way around.
Oh. There
being eight yeses.
No.
Eight noes.
Thank you, staff. Still does not prevail, but. There being five yeses and eight noes, the motion does not prevail.
We liked it better the other way.
Are we sure?
Thank you. Any further discussion on the on Senate File 898 as amended? Senator Dibble.
Thanks. You'll only have to put up with me a couple more times, Mr. Chair. But my other members might have some additional ideas for the bill. I'd like to offer the A6 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble offers the A6 amendment. On the amendment, Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. What the A6 is restores the general fund base to the Metropolitan Council. Tried to package that up in the governor's bill, so I'll try to do that on its own. We heard the testimony from the agency. We heard the testimony from the various stakeholders and users of the system. We know that the general fund cut itself represents something on the order of a 26-27% cut to the general fund base. Met Council has taken some pretty severe cuts, disproportionate to the general fund deficit in years past. We know that MVEST itself has way underperformed its forecasts. Highly volatile, seems to be volatile to the negative quite a bit. And I understand you put in some provisions, to backfill some of those cuts that we're making, and I appreciate the effort very much, sincerely, Mr. Chair. But it's going to represent what will likely amount to a 50-cent fare increase. And Mr. Chair, I just have to point out, if we were to have increased gas taxes on the same schedule that we've increased fares in the metropolitan area, our gas tax would be a whole lot higher than it is now, like 53, 54, 5 cents higher than it is now. I don't think we are willing to quite do that. Gas prices, of course, have increased. That means we're paying more to drive. But that's the price of gas. That's not a tax per se. Gas is taxed on a per gallon basis. But bringing up the gas tax increase also makes us aware of the fact that the cut that's reflected in the bill doesn't reflect the projections that Met Council anticipates. If fuel does get to $4 a gallon, that's another $11 million or so that they're going to be paying for fuel just to run the bus system in the metro area. So that's the spirit, getting people to work, making sure we got a stable bus system so we have the backbone the spine of transit service in the metro area is the spirit in which I offer the A6, Mr. Chair.
Any other discussion? Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask that this amendment also have a roll call vote and be recorded in the journal.
Roll call has been requested. We will have a roll call.
We need to show our hands for the journal.
We need to show our hands for journal.
I see. Three hands. We see three hands, so it will be recorded in the journal. Any other discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Senjo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and perhaps to the author. This once again date takes us out of balance unless there's something here that rebalances that I'm not seeing. Is it correct that this would take us out of balance again?
Senator Dibble.
Oh, well, Mr. Chair, that's what our finance committee's for. We can throw it back in balance, adopt the governor's budget and revenue, and we'd be good to go.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, there's always a way. Is that it?
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Maybe raise a few taxes or something, yeah.
Yes, raise some revenue.
Senator Dibble moves the A6 amendment. Any further discussion? We have a roll. A roll call has been requested. We'll have a roll call.
Senator Gimsey?
No.
Senator DeCryf?
No.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Howell? Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Lilly?
No.
Senator Lurie?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
No.
Senator Reinert? Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Senjum?
No.
Senator Sharon?
Yes.
Senator Sieben?
Yes.
Senator Wolf?
Being five yes, seven no, the motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
Chairman, I have the A18 amendment.
Senator Rest moves the A18 amendment. On that amendment, Senator Rest.
We'll get Mr. Chairman, over. I would direct members' attention to, first of all, what is being deleted in the amendment. And it is on page 11. There are three things there that in your bill you call on Met Council to use in avoiding service reductions and route elimination in the order that you state, using operating efficiencies, fare increases, and then the authority that's granted to the council in Article 2, Sections 18 and 19, which has to do with the livable communities and two other accounts that are in the bill. And what I am doing in the A18 amendment is to set some different priorities, and in particular to well, one of them is the same, and that is the third one. But in number one, which is the biggest difference, is to use the excess reserve funds, and we have seen this as a strategy in the past and for other funds when there are excess reserve funds to redirect them. And there are a number of excess reserve funds in the so-called opt-outs, which this amendment would redirect back to Met Council for the purpose of avoiding service reductions and route eliminations, and in particular would not call for any fare increases, except that when all the other strategies had been fully deployed and the service cuts had been made. And I would point out that the subsidies that are made to the opt-outs are do come from MBEST dollars, and I think that it is an appropriate step for us to take. And as an example, for the Maple Grove estimated 2010 fund balance is $9.5 million, and their 2011 budget expenses are just under $4,250,000, which is which results in a $226,000 fund balance over what their needed expenses are going to be. And the amendment calls for a return to Met Council of those MBEST dollars in their reserve funds of everything that exceeds 25%. And if that was done for each of the opt-outs, that could return almost $18 million to Met Council, so that they could avoid fare increases, making use of all of their efficiencies, and also looking at it to the degree that they need to look at the other three funds that are mentioned in your bill. I think most notably the livable communities dollars before they went to fare increases. And so I would offer that as an alternative to what you have in the bill. And Mr. Chair, I also would ask for a roll call on this amendment, and also that it be printed in the journal.
Roll call has been requested. A roll call on this. Any further discussion? Senator Seba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to clarify with the author. So what you're doing, Senator Ress, is just taking reserves from these opt-outs, which far exceed current capacity or current fund balance targets that are listed in statute. So you're first just taking the reserves to say this money is coming from MVEST.
This money is coming from MVEST, and it's only looking at the reserves that are greater than they're maintaining 25% above what their expected costs are going to be. So it's like they had 125%, and then what's above that would be returned to support transit that would not have Met Council have to go to a fare increase in order to, and I think it's in the delete all, Mr. Chairman, the fare box recovery by $10 million.
Senator Stephen?
Just to follow up on that, Senator Rest, are you familiar or aware, am I correct in saying that Metro Mobility serves the opt-outs?
Senator
that are
Rest?
Serviced by the opt-outs?
Yes. I think that's the case, yes.
And Mr. Chair?
And maybe we could have somebody from Met Council. Mr. Shetnin is here. He could speak to specific questions about it.
I think we would also like to hear from the suburban transit providers, if there's somebody here with them. We would like to have their input on this. Senator Dibble, did you have a comment?
Oh, thanks, Mr. Chair. What I wanted to hear from Mr. Shetnin about is this business of the reserves, wondering how much is available in the opt-out reserves. I know you guys keep track of that because you send the MBEST money over to the opt-outs, and how much is available in the Met Council reserves as well, because that's what we're looking to draw from to help mitigate these cuts. And Mr. Chair, I think a larger point that needs to be made is that suburban opt-outs are receiving absolutely no impact from the budget cuts that are in this bill. So, you know, while literally tens of millions of dollars are sitting in their reserve accounts.
Mr. Shetland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. Mr. Chair, I think I'll try to answer Senator Sieben's question first about the opt-out providers and whether or not they provided the ADA-required Metro Mobility Service. And the council provides that service in those communities, in the opt-out communities. The opt-out providers do not provide the ADA service. That is a council run program. And to Senator Dibble, I would have to ask the folks from the opt-out providers to help identify what their reserves are. I know that there's some that are higher than others. I will tell you that line 1.10 of the bill also says that the council must use our reserves. And I do know that the council has a targeted reserve of 8.3% of our operating budget, which is roughly 1 month's reserve for our program and for our system, our operations. And we are right at about that 8.3% right now. Now, in fairness to the opt-out providers, they are a smaller set of providers, so they need to maintain maybe a larger fund balance. But I know that the chair, you were asking if there was someone from the opt-out providers who could come here. I could get that number for you very quickly if you would like and provide that to the committee about what their balances are if someone from the opt-out providers isn't here.
As long as you're here, Mr. Shetnan, can you put a dollar value to the 8.3% or your 1 month's operating expenses? I don't believe we heard that.
Mr. Chair,
how much do you have in reserves, Mr. Shetland?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to provide that once I get these numbers. Give me 15 minutes, and I'd be happy to tell you what that is. Do we have it right here?
Less than 15 minutes. Very good, Mr. Shetland.
Mr. Chair, our overall reserve is to the tune of about $17.5 million. And, Mr. Chair, just to speak to that just a little bit more, is that the discussion about the motor vehicle sales tax came up, and one of the things that the reserves allow us to do is to maintain some balance in our program because those MBES revenues come in fluctuating. And so when we can use some of those reserve dollars to make sure that the system runs on an even keel, I should say, versus having to fluctuate our system based on the incoming MBES dollars, because our most stable funding source is the general fund, and of course that is the money that is being reduced in your bill. So we become even more reliant on the motor vehicle sales tax, and so maintaining our reserves at a 8% level we think is the proper thing to do, because the other thing that we've talked about many times is that the motor vehicle sales tax revenues generally have not come in at target. And between the February 2010 forecast, which the legislature used to set or to look at this budget, and then the 2011 February forecast, the forecast was off by over $40 million worth of MBES revenues that we were planning on. So when we move forward and look at the motor vehicle sales tax and its fluctuations, it's generally always been lower, and so that reserve fund we believe is very important, and that doesn't just go to our transit, our bus system. That also is the reserve for the dollar ride programs. It's for contracted regular route programs. It's Metro Mobility. It's the Hiawatha line, and it's the North Star line, where I believe that the reserves that the opt-out providers will discuss is just for their particular system. I hope Mr. Chair, I hope that's what you were looking for.
Appreciate you putting a dollar figure to that. That gives us a better understanding, and they can certainly understand the fluctuation in the MVEST. Maybe we could ask council what impact this would have to the opt-outs as far as the MVEST dollars that they receive and that relationship. Ms. Berzofsky.
Mr. Chair and members, the way the amendment is structured, the council provides financial assistance to the opt-out providers, and this paragraph B that starts on 1.24 and continues on into the next page describes the calculation for assistance. So the way the amendment is structured, the new language, paragraph C, beginning at 211, provides an exception to the normal computation. So the council would actually not be taking the reserves from the opt-outs, but would be reducing the amount of financial assistance that it would provide by the amount of the excess in the operating reserves of the opt-outs, if that
Mr. Chairman,
sense.
That would be then the equivalent of reducing their reserves, and Mr. Shetnan mentioned the Met Council's reserve is 8%.
8.3%.
And we would be, and this amendment would leave them with a 25% reserve fund balance and couldn't go lower than that.
Mr. Shetnan, has this been, this strategy been used in the past when had reductions in general fund spending at the Met Council?
Mr. Chair and members, this has not been a strategy. However, when we've talked about MBEST and general fund reductions in the past, we've always been seeing forecasted increase in the motor vehicle sales tax. And even though those forecasts haven't the revenues haven't met the forecast, there's also been a phase-in amount of the MBEST as well to go from the 21.5% that we received in 2001 through 2007. And then when the constitutional amendment passed, we went from 21.5% up to 36%. So this hasn't been a strategy before, but I think it would be safe to say that, you know, these are actual transit dollars that the council through our reserves and the opt-outs through their reserves. It's more appropriate to use that for transit than it would be the livable communities funds or the RALF funds, because those are a property tax levy and funds collected that are totally unrelated to transit.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The $18 million of, you know, the 8.5%, you know, and it pains me to try to do a take on those dollars, because I completely understand the volatility of MVEST. It's been a smart strategy. So it kind of gets us a little outside of what the auditor recommends to us of maintaining somewhere, you know, fund reserves for these transit operators between 8.5% and 35% is their recommendation in their report. But nevertheless, these are difficult times. All told, the amount of cash sitting in reserves for the six opt-out providers is about $18 million as well. Now, keep in mind, that's $18 million sitting in cash in reserves. In some cases, represents more than twice as much as they need to operate for a year, 225% for a set of systems that provide 5% of the rides in the metropolitan area total. And, for a systems that provide the highest per passenger subsidy as well, on some really, really nice buses. Wish I rode on a bus that nice. So that's the spirit in which this is offered. There's a lot of cash sitting around in reserves, both of the Met Council and in these opt-out providers. I agree with Mr. Shetnan about item three, you know, using the property tax levy, for other purposes, for revitalizing our communities. That's less than desirable. It was a very, very undesirable tool that we put in the toolbox last year, but, we're just trying to give the Met Council some options, just in the same spirit as your bill, Mr. Chair.
Without the fare increases being, without the fare increase, of trying to find a way to do this without going directly to fare increases, which we know, you know, depresses ridership as people can't afford it, and these dollars, these cash reserves are there. without doing damage to them. And it's not saying zero. It's saying maintain up to 25% rather than 225%. And doing it through just not doing the cash flow out to them at this particular time.
Senator Est, I appreciate your approach here, and there are certain parts of it that I actually like, and I think might actually fit our. We may be able to pull those out. We'll have to see. But you know, the governor did in his original budget for transportation, I believe, have a 25-cent increase, or maybe he just suggested it. But there was a significant amount of talk around town and in the media that the governor was open to the idea of 25 cents per ride. And I believe that the numbers that they came up with at that time were about $12 million per year for that. So, you know, I guess I understand your reluctance to raise fares, and I appreciate that. Nobody likes to do that, but everything is going up. Gas is going up, tires are going up, the cost of automobiles is going up. You know, the cost of parking, everything, virtually with the cost of food is going up. So, you know, to increase in those areas where we can and leaving the discretion to the Met Council to do that is also in line with the governor's thinking. And so I'm tempted to pull certain parts maybe of your amendment here, it's certainly the using the council's reserves rather than mm-hmm. having the council reach outside of its normal bounds and invading other transit authorities.
Mr. Chairman, as Senator Dibble pointed out, the dollars that are in their reserves are invest dollars. They're not property tax dollars, and we're not suggesting, certainly not in this amendment, extending the transit taxing district, as some have, and it seems to me that these using of these reserves to support the entire transit system. I know that we operate separate ones, but one of the points that was made by the legislative auditor was to look at ways of streamlining governance. Now, we're not suggesting that here, but it is a way of, in a sense, doing what a lot of us support, and that's some sort of shared services. And, again, these are MBEST dollars. They are way in excess of these reserves way in excess of their operating expense needs, and seems like to me to be a reasonable alternative at this point for the use of those reserves. Now, Senator Dibble mentioned that the auditor talked mm-hmm. about having 35% coverage, and that produces 14 million rather than 17 million if you took it to 35%, and I just think it's really something that we should be looking at, and even if you don't support my amendment today, I hope that you will look to it as a way. Or some sort of model looking going forward of a way of keeping the fares as low as we can for people who, as we heard in testimony earlier today, use public transportation because they don't drive, or they can't drive, or they can't afford to drive, and it makes them able to be full members of our communities or get to school or get to work. And I think we need to do whatever we can and that within reason to keep the fares down. And certainly, even the 25-cent fare increase the most important thing is not to eliminate routes so that people, even if they had to pay 25 cents more, and I would like to think we can do better than that, that is the absolute last resort. It's kind of like when you cut libraries, the last thing you ever cut is the budget for the books you cut. But in this instance, what we don't want to cut is the service.
Senator Sieben, you were first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify, too, about and add to this discussion in that, and perhaps Mr. Shetnin can answer this, if the some of these suburban opt-outs are sitting on fund balances in excess of 225%, do they need to raise their fares if the Met Council raises, if Met Transit raises their fares, or can they use that fund balance? So in other words, by not adopting this provision, are we insulating the suburban opt-outs from having to absorb a fare increase at the expense of districts like mine and Senator Lilly's who don't have a suburban opt-out system?
I can answer. Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, what we would do when we call an across-the-board fare increase is across all systems. So that would include the opt-out providers at that point. So they would also receive the revenue collected from the fare increase.
Well,
Senator Sieben?
I stand corrected then, but would make the point then that their fund balances will just go up all that more then because they're already sitting on more, and then will also have a fare increase on top of that to supplement their operational costs.
And Senator Sieben, I know that in these tough economic times, we all look with envy at anybody that's got a couple of dollars in the bank, and whether it be the Met Council at 17.5 or some of these suburban opt-outs that may have $2 million here, $4 million there, but potentially they can expand their service too with some of that, and maybe they have plans to expand their routes and their service and accommodate more of the people that we heard from today using those dollars. So I'm reluctant in any way to start looking with envy at other people's checkbooks and saying that we should probably tap into them. I think, like I said, the governor has indicated that a 25-cent across-the-board fare increase would more than cover the shortfall there. And you know, I would hope that my colleagues on both sides of the aisle would take his lead and join with us and asking for that modest increase. I know you're not going to.
Senator Gimsey.
I threw, just throw that out as a nicety. Senator Rest.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would submit that perhaps the governor, in making his proposal, had not seen all of the detail in the legislative auditor's report, which shows all of these reserve fund balances. Maple Grove Transit has 9.6 million. Plymouth Metro Link, which serves some of my constituents, has 4.6 million. Prior Lake Transit, 1.4, and Shakopee, 1.6. So, and these again are way in excess of the, and it's on page 72 of the report, way in excess even of what the legislative auditors recommended as a 35% reserve fund balance. So I think going forward, if we don't have to have the 25-cent increase or 50 cents or whatever it is, that we should be looking for ways of avoiding that, whether the governor recommended it or, sir, whether you've recommended it. So.
And Senator Rest, I couldn't agree more, and I think that even if it does happen, maybe at some point in time when the economy has turned around and MVEST is booming and there is money and we're back to the 2007 days when we had a $2.2 billion surplus, my first year in the legislature, we could look at trimming those increases back or have that dialogue. But certainly at this point in time and where we are today to circumvent the plans that possibly some of these opt-out providers have for those fund balances, which again I will say could include better accessibility to our most needy citizens. And certainly if they do have excessive fund balances, I would say it's time to get out there and start looking to see how you can better serve your communities and use those fund balances to spend them down and use the money that is going to them for that intended purpose rather than maintain these large fund balances and meet the goals that we all have of providing the best possible service. So, Senator Dibble, and then I have Senator Cruz.
Well, Mr. Chair, frankly, I think the public will be shocked when they find out that the transit systems, you know, and this is supposed to be a one metropolitan area, the opt-outs are supposed to be work, and the legislative auditor called that out, and I agree with the legislator, and I have a good relationship with the suburban opt-outs. But frankly, I'm disappointed that they're not stepping forward and volunteering this money to the overall system at a time when Metro Transit is going to take a very serious hit to its general fund budget, $32 million. And it's not a 25-cent fare increase you're proposing. It's a 50-cent fare increase you're proposing in your bill, Mr. Chair. And you want to talk about thwarting plans. We're going to be thwarting a number of plans that Met Council has to operate 95% of the transit service in this metropolitan area. We're going to be thwarting a number of plans that people have to get to work, you know, to get to their jobs, to get to school. Meanwhile, the suburban opt-outs are sitting on a pile of cash. They're sitting on $26.8 million. If we bring them down to that 25% operating threshold, that's $18 million that would be made available to forego, you know, a lot of difficulty and a lot of pain, and, you know, to protect that money that's just being stockpiled in cash reserve while Met Council has to eat a $32 million general fund cut. People living at the margins, and about Senator Gazelka asked earlier how many folks are in poverty who use the Met Council system. 35% of the folks who are using the Met Council system are in poverty. Have to eat that cut. Suburban opt-outs are not touched in this budget. They are getting off scot-free. They can do whatever they want for as long as they want while they're sitting on an excess of $18 million in cash. The public is going to be shocked. And we have the additional fuel costs that are going to be added to Met Council's budget, $11 million. So I think this is a sensible way to go. Frankly, disappointed the opt-outs aren't here volunteering this money to the overall system so we all get through this period of time somewhat whole. They're going to remain completely whole. They're going to have 25% operating reserves if this provision is passed, which is, you know, in the ballpark of what the auditor themselves recommend.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, you know, just a couple of thoughts here. I truly do respect what Senator Rest is trying to do with this. I as well would like to minimize the impact to those who use our systems. A couple of thoughts, though. You know, those of us in the education committee, this vaguely reminds me of something we do in education as well. And I think what I've heard this year through testimony is that one of the problems this can cause us with cash flow, if we draw on these reserves without knowing what the cash flow needs of these opt-out programs are, you know, what is that going to do to them? I don't know. I don't have those numbers in front of me. But I think that is something that we should at least take into consideration. Second thought, you know, I think these opt-outs opted out for a reason. I think they opted out with the thought that they had a better plan, that they could go out and they could make it work a little bit better, a little bit more efficiently. And I think what we've found here is they were successful at that. They did do it more efficiently, and that's why they are sitting on these reserves. So I just question the potential message that we're sending to those folks that do want to try and go out on their own, do want to try and do it better, do want to try and save taxpayers' dollars, be more fiscally responsible. What is this going to send to them as far as a message goes? You know, if we are responsible and we do get these reserves, well, what's the point? Because when there comes to be a time of need, we're going to get them taken from us, despite what our plans may be for expansion, long-term, you know, vision, things like that. You know, we said, well, why aren't those opt-outs here at the table? You know, Senator Dibble mentioned that. Well, I would almost reverse that. And I would almost say, well, why aren't we looking to these opt-outs to see what we could potentially be doing better? Let's look at them and let's say, okay, what are they doing that is helping them get to this point of success to build these large revenues? I think we need to reward that type of a mentality rather than punish it.
Mr. Chair.
I have a
couple of responses to his point. If you don't, cash flow is not an issue in this instance like it is for school districts. It's irrelevant.
Well, and Mr. Chairman and Senator Est, I fully do, you know,
it's not
concede that it potentially couldn't be. I was, you know, just a thought, throwing it out there and saying, we don't know. We don't know.
We do know.
Cash flow doesn't matter here.
Mr. We will leave the operating reserves at 25%, which according to the auditor is sufficient for cash flow purposes. A. B, the opt-outs are the least efficient providers of transit service in the metropolitan area. The least efficient. So, you know, they could learn a lot from Met Council, which is one of the most efficient transit providers in the entire nation. The auditor report tells us that. We've known that for years and years. So, you know, this is a very reasonable proposal.
Which you can still vote no on. Which you can still vote no on. But I do appreciate the discussion and hope you will look to this model as a possible solution to not having, not only not having a 50-cent fare increase, but we can avoid having even a 25-cent fare increase, which the governor had proposed. But I thank you for the opportunity for the discussion.
Welcome, Senator Rest. I appreciate, too, the discussion we're having here. It opens it up for us and makes a little bit better understanding of where we all are. So, Senator Steven.
Well, Mr. Chair, and just to respond to Senator Cruz, as someone, I don't know if you represent an opt-out specifically or not, but in my neck of the woods, and this committee has heard this more than they probably like, but we're fighting just to maintain the service that we have because in the past, as Met Transit has cut routes or not expanded routes, in the Southeast Metro, it's hard to build ridership so that then when it comes time to eventually make route reductions, they look at the ridership numbers, and we don't have the same ridership because the fluctuation in service has been up and down over the years. So if you don't represent an opt-out, if you do, then I understand where you're coming from a different perspective. But you need to think, too, in terms of how this will impact your particular area of the metropolitan area. I know, at least for the Southeast Metro and the East Metro, where Senator Lilly represents, we're struggling just to build our service, let alone maintain the service we have. There isn't transit to go from Cottage Grove to Woodbury or from Woodbury further north. It's very difficult for residents to get around within suburban communities. Those opt-outs don't serve our area. And as Senator Dibble said, the areas they do serve it less efficiently than Met Transit. This is just, a creative way that the House does not have this in their proposal, so we may as well add it into this bill so that the discussion can continue to take place. I'm cognizant, I feel badly that the opt-outs aren't here to defend themselves about this, but I do think that just with the data we have from the legislative auditor's report, it's worth putting into the bill at this point just so that we can continue to have that conversation and really look at the issues of equity surrounding service in different parts of the metropolitan area.
Mr. Shetna?
Mr. Chair and members, I just need to clarify one point that has been discussed here. The governor never proposed that we should increase fares. The governor, in the original $6.2 billion deficit, had recommended a $5.4 million general fund reduction for the Met Council annually, $10.8 million reduction for the biennium. And there was lots of discussion about what, how we would address that. And in, when the new forecast came out and the total went from $6.2 billion down to $5, you will know the governor reinstated that $10.8 million to make it very clear that he does not support a fare increase. So I just know that there was the discussion here. I just, as a point of clarification, that was never on the table for the governor. It was in the paper. Lots of people were speculating, but I can speak on this issue that that was not his intention.
Senator Fair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Has anybody ever noticed when you come to that point in the day when you realize that you haven't been drinking decaf? Because right now I'm wired and I'm not used to not to drinking regular coffee, and I just realized that. I think I might. I would like to offer an oral amendment, if I may. I think I might have something, but it's worth discussing here. And what I would like to offer would be to delete lines 1.4 through lines 1.9. And delete everything after the period in line 1.16. Everybody got that?
No.
Well, it's at the end of the sentence after and service cuts have been made, period. So it'd be line 1.17, I guess, and through the end 2.20.
Mr. Chairman, if he could just explain the effect of it, I think I could follow that better than
it takes the
outcome. Ms. Berezovsky, do you have have you been following this discussion? Maybe you've been.
Mr. Chair, did you want me to speak about the effect of the amendment?
Yeah.
Or yes. Just. Oh, okay.
He just takes the opt-outs out, right?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, it takes out the opt-outs, and it leaves as it retains the language in the A1 that says deploy the following strategies to avoid service reductions and route elimination, but then it specifies just the two remaining strategies of using the council's reserve funds and then the transfer from livable communities and RALF. And then it retains that line that says no fare increase unless, and then all three on 1.16 should be changed to both. Strategies have been fully deployed and service cuts have been made.
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for a roll call on that.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a recording of that roll call in the journal.
Could, do I have to ask for three hands?
Do I get a chance to explain what my thought is here?
Certainly. Senator
Pretty
Barry.
Obvious, Senator.
Well, let's be realistic here. I have a savings account, and when times are bad, I dip into the savings account. And I'm hearing that Metro has $17.5 million in a savings account, rainy day account, whatever it might be. Times are tough. So why wouldn't we dip into that? We have been dipping into all sorts of accounts. This is their program. And so we're looking at a way to help them through, and to me it just makes sense that's, you know, outside of our retirement funds, it makes sense that that's what we dip into when we have a tough time going and the economy is bad. So why wouldn't we? It's their transit area, and I just think that it makes sense to use that.
Senator, do I see three hands for a roll call and log it in the journal? The same three. Any further discussion on the
Mr. Perry
amendment to the amendment? Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, we operate as an entire metropolitan area. It's supposed to be one coherent, cohesive transit system. The opt-outs opted out in a bygone era. But, you know, they exist and they do a reasonably good job operating their service. They operate, you know, coach quality buses. They offer transit service to 5% of the people in the metropolitan area. They have the highest per passenger subsidy of any of the providers in the metropolitan area. They're sitting on reserves that are in excess of 75%, you know, or 75% of their operating annual operating expenses. We bring them down to 25%, which is what is considered reasonable by the legislative auditor, and we forego, you know, a tremendous amount of difficulty to the overall system in the metropolitan area. We will, of course, have to go to the savings account that the Met Council itself has managed to put together as well. But I think it'd be pretty hard to go out and defend protecting $18 million in cash just sitting in an account not being used of excess MVEST revenue that they've gotten that we all pay when we buy cars. We all pay it. You know, these MVEST revenue, this 18 wasn't generated within these opt-out communities. It's generated in the entire state, frankly. You know, so it's not their money. It's excess money in excess of what they need. They have, you know, one has 225% more than their annual operating expenses. Another has 163, 142. I just don't know how we go to the public and defend this when we have an overall system that we're operating in the metropolitan area.
Senator Perry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Senator Dibble, what you're saying, because the areas that opted out are doing a good job in their areas, you're saying they're not doing a good job? If they weren't doing a good job doing what they should be doing, why would they have such great reserves to be able to use in a rainy day fund for their areas? Why would that be wrong for them to have that? Said their fares were higher?
Mr. Chair?
Is that?
Let him finish his point, Senator Dibble.
I heard you say their fares were higher. They have so-so buses. But it seems to me that people must be using their services. They are putting money away that they have for the opt-out area in case something comes up. And I'm sure that if the Met Council wanted to, they could probably work out an arrangement to borrow some money from those that have opted out and work a payback plan down the road. I mean, it would make sense to me.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
They're doing a fine job, not a stellar job. They're providing a less efficient service. This isn't from fares. This is from MBES. These are subsidy dollars. They're getting too much, frankly, more than what they need from all the rest. These are tax dollars coming from all of us, more than they need. They provide, their buses are like tour buses. They're palaces. They're beautiful, wonderful buses. Really expensive to operate. They pay the exact same fare that we all pay, $1.75 at the non-peak, $2.25 at the peak, $3 rush.
Good to know.
It's a pretty good deal, you know, to take the bus in from Plymouth or Apple Valley or someplace like that. And even at that, they're just stockpiling mountains and mountains of cash. And so, you know, as we're looking around, you know, I see us sweeping a lot of dollars out of a lot of accounts that are excess. We just had the energy bill where we swept $3 million into the general fund from the Renewable Development Fund, from the Telephone Assistance Fund, and from a number of others because there were, you know, excess revenues just sitting there not being used to help offset the impact on the general fund. That's what we're doing here. That's what we're doing in a number of committees. I don't know how we can possibly sit here and defend just $18 million sitting in a bank account. And we leave money. We leave money, sufficient money, according to the auditor, sufficient money for the rainy day, you know, to help them with their cash flow needs, to help them with their, you know, with what they need to have in reserves. This is considered excess reserves, according to our own legislative auditor.
Fine. Just one final comment.
Senator Perry.
And I understand that. I guess maybe the other thing, if the those that opted out had probably had prior knowledge of this particular amendment, they would have been here. Or if maybe they were asked early on that, hey, is there anything we can do? We really need some help here. But they weren't. The amendment shows up here tonight without any previous notice to them, and we sit here and say, well, they didn't show up. Well, how could they have shown up to plead their case? So I think it's okay that they have that reserve at this time. And like I said, maybe down the road, the Met Council would like to talk to them and say, hey, can we borrow some money from you?
Well, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just so that the committee knows, I know for a fact that Maple Grove is opening a new transit depot right next to the hospital. I do not know this for a fact, but it would not surprise me if part of those reserves would potentially be used for that expansion. So that I just want to make it clear, that's what we're doing here.
Mr. Chairman, just one final
Senator point.
First of all, Senator Cruz, those dollars are capital dollars. These are operating dollars, not the same dollars. And Senator Perry, I think the opt-outs were here on two occasions when the legislative auditor presented his report, and they're fully aware of the recommendations, and it seems to me that they one of the recommendations that we're not proposing here is extending the taxing district, which also the legislative auditor proposed, because that would have an impact. What we're talking about is invest dollars that everybody has paid that are sitting in excess cash reserves, and it seems to me it's just a matter of equity. I have to leave.
Just one more.
Senator Dibble.
I think it'll also be interesting for the public if they found out we protected this $18 million bucks while Maple Grove and Plymouth Metrolink provide free bus service, you know, in and around their own suburban communities. I mean, you know, this is the kind of extra money they have laying around to provide these kinds of services. You know, it's just, you know, it's surprising how there's this tremendous double standard for protecting these incredible services, you know, that, you know, on these gorgeous buses that come at such a higher subsidy while they're stockpiling cash, and we're asking people at the margins, and we're asking for significant service reductions from the core system that provides 95% of the service in the metro area. I think the rest has to leave, so I think we need to.
Thank you for all of your comments and the discussion here. I think we should move. We all know the issues surrounding this. We have a roll call vote on the Perry amendment to the amendment. There will be a roll call.
Senator Gimsey?
Yes.
Senator DeCryf?
Yes.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Gazalka?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a Perry amendment. Excuse me. No.
Oh, here I thought I was going to get my first
bipartisan. Right.
Yes.
Senator Gazalka? Senator Howe? Senator Cruz?
Yes.
Senator Lilly? Senator Lori?
No.
Senator Perry?
Yes.
Senator Reinhart? Senator Rest?
No.
Senator Senjum?
Yes.
Senator Sharon?
No.
Senator Sieben?
No.
Senator Wolf?
Yes.
There being 7 yes votes and 5 no votes, the motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rest?
I withdraw the amendment.
Senator Rest withdraws the 18 amendment.
Senator Gimsey?
Senator Lori, we haven't
heard
much
from you. I've got the A5 amendment. If we can switch from Metro stuff to back to Greater Minnesota, and I'll say right at the outset.
Senator Lori moves the A4, did you say? A5 amendment?
But this will also throw our budget out of balance, but less than a third of what Senator Dibble's restoration of MetTransit threw it out of balance. So this is restoring the base budget for Greater Minnesota Transit, which, you know, suffered a 24.5% cut in this budget. It's 20% of the entire target. We heard extensive testimony from college students, from elderly, from disabled, from individuals with a social conscience that by choice decided that for livable communities they wanted to try transit, from low-income working families that rely on transit services. We heard from MnDOT themselves that this cut would be devastating to greater Minnesota transit providers. We heard from Tony Kellen a couple days ago from the St. Cloud Metro Bus Service, you know, and his statistics that we're only meeting 60 to 65% of the transit needs in greater Minnesota. And to me, the case was just made very strongly that this cut is going to cut too deeply. A couple more points I'd like to make. Earlier in the session, we heard and saw maps about counties and their implementation of greater Minnesota transit. And I think the map that was presented to us showed four counties that had still never been able to implement transit. And I'm here to say that number dropped by one during this session. Pine County, the county I live in and represent, one of them, finally, after years of really trying, did get a transit system up just last month. A cut of this magnitude will just cut them off at the knees as they're trying to get off on the right foot. And so, you know, with the fact that this $4 million cut, we also heard from MnDOT that it would be compounded and be a $5.3 million reduction in service for greater Minnesota. I just think it's too much to bear. So, I mean, I think we understand the dynamic here, but I would move the A5 amendment, and I would request that there be a roll call recorded in the journal on this as well.
Three hands for a roll call recorded in the journal. Seeing three hands, there will be a roll call. Any other discussion on the A5 amendment? Seeing none, we will have a roll call.
Senator Gimsey?
No.
Senator DeCryf?
No.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Howe? Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Lilly? Senator Lori?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
No.
Senator Reinhart? Senator Rest? Senator Senjim?
No.
Senator Sharon?
Yes.
Senator Sieben?
Yes.
Senator Wolf?
No.
There being four yes and seven no, the motion does not prevail. Senator Sieben. Oh, Senator Sharon, you're next, okay.
I'm sorry. I was going to do the A3 amendment, but I'll set that aside. That's one that I'm absolutely certain that everybody here can vote for.
Save it.
But I'll set that aside because Senator Lori just completed his amendment and offer instead the A13 amendment.
Senator Sharon offers the A13 amendment. Senator Sharon on the amendment.
This language refers to page 3 and deletes lines 21 to 29. And what this does is allows the commissioner to utilize its grant evaluation process to distribute the allocation of the funds from the general fund appropriation reductions instead of setting aside and protecting certain funding streams, one at not to be impacted at all and one not to be impacted more than 10%. It allows the flexibility in the decision-making process with the Department of Transportation. What's being mandated here is a $4 million annual general fund appropriation cut across 13 small cities, essentially, that's Duluth, St. Cloud, Rochester, Moorhead, and then also against some of the smaller cities, which include Mankato. Let's see if I can find my... a list of the others. Benson, Faribault, Granite Falls, Hibbing, Montevideo, Le Sueur, Morris, Northfield, St. Peter, Stuartville, Winona, and Mankato. And they would have to carry a significant portion of the significant cuts. We can help buffer that somewhat, if not by restoring the resources for them, by at least allowing the department to use its typical grant evaluation process to distribute those dollars.
Any discussion on the amendment? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I appreciate your effort to protect the elderly and disabled in the rider language that you offered. But I think the point that Mr. Kellen made and Senator Sharon made as well during hearing on the bill itself was that you don't really get away with severely harming the elderly and disabled if you're just confining the vast bulk of these cuts to rural transit just to the urban and small urban areas of greater Minnesota, because a large portion of the riders are elderly and disabled folks who aren't necessarily receiving specifically targeted elderly and disabled service from those funding streams. They're using regular route scheduled service and in other kinds of service that would be targeted at these urban and small urban areas. And so it just makes sense to for MnDOT to work with the greater Minnesota transit providers to allocate this level of cut across the entire system. You know, if you think you're protecting the elderly and disabled by supporting the existing rider language, you're simply not. You're actually hurting them pretty seriously, because they're riding the very systems that are supported by the urban and small urban funding streams.
Well, I guess I would like to hear from the commissioner, since from MnDOT concerning this amendment, since they are mentioned in it, and maybe they can tell us a little bit about this evaluation process and criteria before we act on that. Offer us some clarity. Mr. Shadow.
Mr. Chair, the process that we use is a very robust process where we take into account performance measures, accessibility, which is to make sure that we're covering as many areas as is reasonable given the performance of service that would operate in those areas. It looks at service plans. We require a service plan to be provided to us for every single route that's operated in greater Minnesota, and we have a team of professionals that evaluate all that information each year before making decisions about the funding. What Senator Dibble said is absolutely correct, that all the vehicles that are in greater Minnesota are ADA accessible vehicles. And while the elderly and disabled service that's specifically in the urban areas greater than 50,000 is specific to elderly and disabled, every single one of the vehicles in greater Minnesota is used by elderly and disabled. So whether they're in rural areas, small urbans, regular urban service, or the elderly and disabled specific urban service, it provides service to elderly and disabled people.
Thank you for that. Any other discussion on the amendment? Senator Perry?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not quite. Is this just saying that the commissioner will decide? Is that your intent?
Well, the intent of this is to use the. Excuse me. Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Is to use the process that the department would use in distributing these resources, using their own process rather than us having rider language that speaks to specific groups, that we define that. Instead of us defining it in rider language, we would turn it over to a process that's already in place in the department for distributing these resources. And the two pieces of rider language are what eliminate the elderly, disabled, and then up to 10%. Is that how the language is written? The amount used each year is operating for rural area service must not be reduced more than 10% below the amount in 2011 for that purpose. So those two segments that have rider language would be removed, and instead we would place language that the commissioner shall utilize its grant evaluation process,
Mr. Chair,
which was just described.
Mr. Shadower, is there some type of a report that we could get, say we did adopt this amendment? Is there some type of a report that we could get to see the effects or see what MnDOT has done with their evaluation and how they've distributed those dollars? I'm quite certain there probably is. So
Mr. Chair,
after, say, 1 year?
I believe that the annual report that we put out would provide that information. It shows exactly how much funding is distributed to every single transit system in Greater Minnesota, and that information is put out every year, so you could see by comparing reports what happened the previous year, and that's all right there.
Okay. Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chair. Mr. Shadower, can I answer part of the question, the point I was going to make, but also part of the intent, I think, of this was to make sure that they're working closely with all the providers in the entire state to figure it. And that's what they do. We had thought about just going to the Transit Provider Association, but weren't quite sure if they were. But they do. They consult very actively with all of the providers in the state. They have a table, everyone gathers around and they figure it out in consultation. That's really the intent of this language, as I understand Senator Sharon's goal. Have we requested a roll call? I'd like to do that if I haven't.
You haven't yet.
I request a roll call for printing for the purpose of printing it in the journal, Mr. Chair.
Three hands? There are only two?
Well,
you can
like
do
to
a roll call,
roll
but
call.
Without the three hands, I think we wouldn't, right? We wouldn't be able to log it in the journal.
That's fine. I'd like a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Very good. A roll call has been requested.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Perry.
Thank you very much. I guess I'm not going to vote for this, and I'll tell you why. We give too much of our authority away, and I don't like it. We have rural legislators sitting on this, and we have metro legislators sitting on this committee. And I'm not about it. I get a little tired of we, the elected people, giving up our authority. This is what we're here to do. We're not here to take everything and turn it over to one person or a couple of people that aren't elected. We have the election certificate, and I don't know for what purpose we think that one person or a group of two or three should be doing this. I mean, that's what we're here. Some of the issues that we have in our government today is because elected officials have given up their authority, the authority given to them by their citizens. And I don't know, I just don't see where we're going to gain anything by letting the commissioner utilize its grant evaluation process and criteria. And that's what we're here to do. So I will be voting against this amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Any other? Senator Senchel?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Schottauer, is that it? Okay, Mr. Schottauer. Does this grant evaluation or could it or would it occur in the rural district offices, or does this all occur up here in the Twin Cities?
Mr. Schottauer?
Mr. Chair, Senator, our evaluation team is composed of a district transit project manager from each district, so there's seven of those on our panel. And there are two people from our central office staff that get together. Typically, it happens here in St. Paul. And they run through every single transit system's application. By having each of those district transit project managers as part of that team, there's somebody that's very familiar that works on an almost daily basis with the transit systems in their district, understands what's being proposed, and go through the details of that. And then they share the information between them for the different applications across the state to come up with the best investments.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Schottauer, those
Senator Senchel,
those individuals then would be working with those rural transit providers. They would probably have a sense of what the needs were.
Mr. Chair, Senator, they have an intimate knowledge of each of those district or each of those transit agencies.
Any other discussion? Senator Dibble.
I'd like to withdraw my request for a roll call.
Uh, Senator Sharon renews her motion that the A13 amendment be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No. No. The motion fails.
Senator Gimsey, may I continue, or do you want to move for another?
I think we'll take one from Senator Seba. That's all right. Senator Seba?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer the A12 amendment.
Senator Seba offers the A12 amendment. Senator Seba on the amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, this restores the funding for the Office of Passenger Rail, which is located within MnDOT. And I'd hope that Mr. Henkel could come to the table to provide some additional support for this amendment. But I just remind members that for a little bit of review over the Office of Passenger Rail, basically it got funding again just 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, after not being funded for much of the last decade. And in that decade, Minnesota lost its competitive edge in competing for federal dollars that became available, that are available for upgrades that are made both to our passenger rail system and to our freight rail system. And now that we do have an Office of Passenger Rail, we're in a much better position, especially after we, a few months ago, the state completed the Minnesota Comprehensive Statewide Freight and Passenger Rail Plan. And I know we had some presentations about it, but as members may recall, this vision for rail is not something that is strictly confined to the metropolitan area. It's really the goal of the state rail plan is to bring efficiency to our planning for freight and passenger rail throughout Minnesota, and this has a tremendous impact, as we've heard testimony before, on the economic competitiveness of our rural communities as well as our metropolitan area. So I do think that it's pretty short-sighted to just cut off all of their funding. For example, just the other day, the Rail Forum, which the commissioner established and some of the members here have participated in. There's also local units of government. I know that folks from Duluth are heavily involved in this, folks from Rochester, and really from all over the state. They agreed to recommend to the commissioner that he proceed to try to obtain some of the federal money that was available when Florida rejected their high-speed rail plans from the federal government. So right now, and just so you don't get too excited here, Senator Perry, this isn't the money that the commissioner will likely be applying for now in the next couple of weeks. This $2.4 billion that's available isn't necessarily or is not to connect to Chicago. It's not for high-speed rail to Chicago. Instead, what they're supporting is Northern Lights Express for preliminary engineering and design for that part of that project to complete the Burlington Northern Santa Fe third rail line, which is just north of the Twin City or over in Minneapolis, a $115 million project, and the Warner Bridge project, which is in the Southeast Metro for $22 million. And those last two, if we are successful in obtaining some of this federal money, it will pay for 100% of the projects. And again, it won't bring increase passenger rail service to any portion of the state, these two projects, but it will increase the efficiency of our freight system. I've said this before, but the Hoffman Yards, which is just about 9 miles south of here, 5% of the nation's freight traffic passes through there on a daily basis. 5% of the nation's freight traffic travels through there. So it just seems to make sense that we maintain our Office of Passenger Rail so that we can continue regardless of whether you agree that the federal government should be spending money on rail, that we should maintain our state commitment so that we can leverage some of this federal money, not only to bring increased potential zip line to Rochester and high-speed rail to Chicago, but also just to continue to improve our freight system for the state of Minnesota. So I'd ask for member support, and perhaps Mr. Henkel can add to that.
Mr. Henkel, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Good evening. I'd like to go on record. My name is Tim Henkel with MnDOT. I'd like to go on record as MnDOT supporting this amendment. While the Senator has made some excellent points, let me try to reiterate MnDOT's position similarly. Our support for this particular amendment is based on the Department's position that MnDOT needs to ensure continued high-speed rail, passenger rail planning today. This will ensure three key outcomes, as the Senator had mentioned: sustainable multimodal transportation in this state, continued economic prosperity, and Minnesota's competitiveness. Let me just quickly go into those in a little more detail to give you some information as to why that's important. First, that this investment ensures a sustainable multimodal transportation system for the future. In short, the rail system is a vital component of Minnesota's multimodal transportation system. This continued investment in planning and development will ensure that we have an integrated freight and passenger rail system, not just the passenger side, but also the freight side of the business, that will ensure that this state continues to provide travel options for Minnesotans and responds to what we're seeing today, the ever-increasing rising costs of energy. Second, to the outcome of economic prosperity, this investment will ensure continued planning and development that will ensure future competitiveness on a global scale. Global markets to reduce travel times, fuel use, and emissions, and increase system capacity, flexibility, and convenience for movement of literally millions of people. And it will support the creation of jobs along with that economic prosperity. Last, to the competitiveness outcome, this investment will ensure that Minnesota can continue to be a transportation leader in this country and position itself to continue to not only plan, but to deliver high-speed rail. In just a few years, Minnesota has gone from what some call a backwater state to a leading example of advanced transportation planning with the award-winning Minnesota State Rail Plan. We've also moved forward with specific investments that the Senator related to. The St. Paul Union Depot is underway. We have worked to also work on Minnesota's designation as a lead agency for developing the Chicago to Twin Cities high-speed passenger rail corridor. This corridor, as most know, is the strongest potential intercity rail corridor in the Chicago hub network, and the one that could have and should have a positive cash flow early on, a corridor that is unlikely to require any operating subsidy. Also of note on the competitive side is that federal funding and public-private investment opportunities usually appear with very, very little advance notice. This is a pay-as-you-go program, unlike the FHWA programs that fund roads and bridges. To be competitive requires that the state be prepared to act quickly and take advantage of these opportunities through upfront planning and the readiness of shovel-ready projects that fit into the proposed systems and criteria that are established by the Federal Rail Administration. Without the resources that are provided through this amendment, Minnesota will lose its competitive standing as a leader in the business center and major producer of goods, services, and technology. This could in the future diminish our quality of life and the relative attractiveness of Minnesota to future generations. And finally, as the Senator noted, yesterday the Passenger Rail Forum was successful in putting forward a unanimous position for Minnesota to move forward for applications for additional funding on those noted corridors. That work requires additional oversight, staffing, et cetera, to be successful. Thanks for the opportunity to go on record, Mr. Chairman. I'd stand for any questions that you may have.
Mr. Henkel, thank you for that update on this. I just want to make it clear that the reason why we looked at this piece was some of the background information that we had on it, and as responsible stewards of the taxpayer dollars, the numbers really didn't look too good when we looked at the amount that was being paid three full-time employees. Of the $500,000 per year, $315,000 of it goes for wages and benefits for three employees. To manage $129,000 worth of contracts, outside techs, folks contracting, $129,000, and $60,000 for office supplies. Certainly, I think you and others could understand why we would take a look at that and wonder why MnDOT couldn't assign a person or two to manage $129,000 worth of outside services and probably cut the $60,000 for office supplies. It has nothing to do with our competitive readiness for grants or anything like that, but our desire was to be responsible with the taxpayers' dollars, and so we think that MnDOT can probably find a better way. Rather than having three full-time employees managing $129,000. So just to be clear on what our thinking was as we looked at that. Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Sieben. I'm just trying to figure out if we did something like this, how much would that take away from Highway 14? If we're taking it out of the general fund and taking it out of fixing highways and bridges. I really have a problem when somebody tells me that we can build a rail line and it's going to be taken care of and it's not going to need any subsidies. Because I thought that I heard that before we did the North Star, that it was going to take care of itself. But I could be wrong. I'm just saying it's a great idea, but not today. We have too many infrastructure problems right now we're trying to deal with, and we don't have enough money to fix the cracks in the road and to repair the bridges. And yet, we want to take $500,000. This reminds me of when we took the $500,000 out last year for a potential bus line while they were fixing, I think, the bridge going your way. I mean, we have to fix the infrastructure we have now, and that's been the problem. Is that we go and we build things or try to do new things before we take care of what we have going on now. We seem to forget about that. It's kind of like in our veterans. We knew we needed a new 21-unit bed in Fergus Falls, Mr. Chairman. So we put the money together to do it, but we forgot. We have to staff it, and we have to maintain it to the tune of $738,000 a year. We forgot about that. I'm saying, let's fix the problems we have today, and $500,000 here and $500,000 there adds up. I mean, I like the idea. I know down the road, if we're going to do something, we have to give it some good thought, but at this point in time, with the way the budget is and what we need to accomplish, I can't. I'm sorry, Senator Sieben, but I can't support this.
Mr. Henkel, do you have a response to that?
If I could just respond to your earlier comments, Mr. Chairman, and clarify that the statistics that you quoted are for a rebuilding period. I want to make clear that as we move forward, we will be moving into a building mode, and the investment that we're making with these dollars is in staff that will provide oversight to the environmental and preliminary engineering requirements that FRA has put forward. And so in the past, we've rebuilt an office and worked to understand what the requirements of federal law are and worked with our partners to generate a plan. In the future, we're moving forward on corridor work that will put these high-speed rail systems in place. Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to request a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested.
To be recorded in the journal.
To be recorded in the journal, Mr. Chair.
Three hands to record it. We have
a bit on that one.
This time we did.
And Mr. Chair, you know, I think one couple things. One is, you know, I don't think this motion actually puts your bill out of balance. Don't know how we get general fund money into road improvements. We have a changing demographic. You know, a lot of folks who really are looking to get around city to city. We're trying to keep people in place, trying to keep our communities vital. You know, we got the silver tsunami. We've got the unbelievable headache and an increasing airfares, unbelievable headache of going to the airport and increasing airfares. I don't know about Chicago to Minneapolis. I think it's going to happen someday. The studies show it'll actually cash flow, which is surprising. And no, there was never any promise that North Star would cash flow. Mm-hmm. You know, but of course, most of our surface transportation doesn't do that. We can get into that conversation a little bit later. This is a nationwide impetus that's going on, and Minnesota is now finally kind of catching up, where a lot of our competing states are well ahead of us. And so to maintain some minimal staffing in the office for the purpose of putting together the grant requests, initiating the kind of preliminary studies that need to be done so that we can figure out where and what makes sense to interconnect our economic hubs, Rochester, Twin Cities, St. Cloud, Duluth, going out west towards Wilmer, Marshall, and the like. It's something we really should be doing for a minimal amount of dollars that doesn't put your bill out of balance, Mr. Chair, as I understand.
Any additional comments?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Seba?
Thank you, Senator Dibble, for covering some of my responses more eloquently than I could to Senator Perry. But I just also add that this office does take care of existing infrastructure. And the fact of the matter is that there's over $1 trillion of freight and tonnage that is transported across Minnesota's railroads every year. And what this office is doing is leveraging federal money that can become available to come into Minnesota to complete projects that will help our economic competitiveness and our businesses. It's important to note, I think, that the Class I railroads have been heavily involved in the Rail Forum and have been supportive, I think it's fair to say, of some of the investments that the state has made in this area. So, again, Senator Perry, I just urge you to consider that this is, although this will help with passenger rail development in the future, which I understand you just, no matter what, may be opposed to, but this is also helping the economic competitiveness of Minnesota, and it'd be a shame to not move forward with this office and this funding if it is available to leverage these federal dollars, which can come back to Minnesota.
Well, I guess probably to make one comment on this proposal, this proposal does go against the guideway investment portion of our bill, too, that passed. It was I believe it was last year's Senate file, 3105. It was a Senator Dibble bill that passed the Minnesota Senate with only two dissenting votes. And in that, if we are going to spend any further dollars, if you want to make a judgment that this is for planning and other portion, pre-planning and all of that for fixed guideways, transit systems, passenger rail, that we have a complete understanding of where all of the money is going to come from, not just for the pre-planning, but for the construction and for the operation and maintenance of that. I think what Senator Perry is saying and what a lot of us are saying is that we need to know where we're going with this. The high-speed rail dollars are not a sure thing. There's discussion going on right now about stopping the New Starts program. We've got the Central Corridor that $1 billion worth of contracts are signed, and there's only $500 million of it accounted for and in the bank. The rest of it is sitting with the federal government that we have no assurances at this point in time. I understand we have letters, and we have letters of intent or something like that, but still, we've had the Met Council sign off on $1 billion worth of contracts that we only have $500 million in the bank for. So we don't have a clear direction as to where transit is, transit, passenger rail, and all of these other systems is going in the state of Minnesota. And I think what Senator Perry's comments, my comments, Senator Day before us, the frustration that was that we saw was just in the lack of a unified approach and a clear understanding. The results of former Senator Saltzman's language on the gateway investment portion that's in our bill was also a response to having a clear understanding where we are going and where we are going to spend our money moving forward. That, of course, is beyond the $500,000 and having three full-time employees at $315,000 managing $129,000. Those are issues that I guess as a businessman I'm very concerned about. And so I can't support this amendment either. I think that MnDOT can more than adequately handle this type of operation, this type of need within the confines of its existing budget, and we don't need to spend an additional $1 million of biennium for it. So. Mr. Appetz, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is John Appetz. I represent up here the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association, which is an association of the short lines and regional railroads, the smaller ones, and a couple of the large railroads, the Union Pacific and the Canadian National as well. I just want to say that the state rail plan is an important document. We hadn't done a state rail plan in 20 years here in Minnesota until the one was done recently. And a portion of funding for that came from some funds that were used by the short line railroads to help move that ahead. It's a plan that calls for a balanced approach to doing this, and that's freight railroads in this state want to work with the state and find a way to assist in the movement both of passengers and freight all across the state of Minnesota. There's a lot of outstate, we work mainly in the outstate areas, and there's a lot of outstate communities who could use the services that we bring both in terms of freight, which is about 40% of what moves here in the state of Minnesota, but in terms of people too. And we're looking forward to that opportunity in any fashion that comes forward out of MnDOT, but I would just suggest that the amendment being offered is one that we would endorse at least the group that I represent, Mr. Chairman. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Appetz. The way I understand is we're trying to get those some of those rails that you and those that you support up to where they can go 25 miles an hour.
True, Mr.
And,
Chairman.
That's an unmet need also we're looking very diligently into trying to fix. Senator Perry.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Appetz, how many groups do you represent?
The short lines, there's about 23 railroads in the state of Minnesota. The short lines are about 19 of the 23. They have about 800 miles of the 4,500 miles of track that are operated in Minnesota. The four other big ones, the class ones, are the Burlington Northern, the Union Pacific, the Canadian National, and the Canadian Pacific. My group is the short lines, the little guys, and the Union Pacific and the Canadian National.
I was just thinking that, Senator Mr. Perry. Chair. If they're great with this, maybe they could all ante up 25 to 30,000 apiece, and we could get to this total.
Well, I'd hate
Mr.
to say
Appetz.
This precedent, Mr. Chairman.
It would be a good public-private,
Senator Perry.
Good public-private working relationship, I think.
Mr. Rapids?
Mr. Chairman, that's an interesting idea.
Mr. Hinkle.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Rapids raises a good point. Your statistic of 129,000 on top of the 315, total 500,000 that's available, that's been expended. There was much more expended for and provided in terms of oversight. The contract for the state rail plan, as an example, was close to $500,000 plus, I believe. And so I just want to make sure everybody here understands that that staff has been providing oversight to a larger budget than what was noted. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Dibble, and then Senator Sandrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps a question for the amendment author. She has a moment. I'm looking at your amendment. If this were a good idea, if the study was a good thing to do, why would we need and land acquisition in here? I mean, it just seems to me that's a little premature.
Senator Stephen?
Mr. Chair, perhaps council can help me, but I thought that this was just restoring the language that was in existing law, including the appropriation amount for the biennium, but that's a good question.
Ms. Bearsall.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Sandrum.
I'm just going to suggest that if this is a good idea, if the study is a good idea, we don't need to, at least ahead of the study, get involved in a land acquisition. So if I could offer a secondary amendment, I suspect it would be to delete the comma, the last, and maybe the council can help, but I'm going to suggest on line 18, after the comma, after design, add and delete the comma on line 18 after engineering, and then strike on line 19 and land acquisition.
There's nothing in there right now for this.
Right. So where would this come from?
Does everybody understand the amendment? Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask Mr. Hinkle perhaps if he has any. Do you even have a copy of the amendment?
I do.
Or any comments on it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, members, while it's unlikely that there will be land acquisition, there is always a potential, given the fact that this is a pay-as-you-go program and federal guidance may provide for funding that allows for acquisition. It might be in our best interest to allow that to stand as the amendment originally had, to allow that to occur should that particular need come to be. Thank you.
Sure. Senator Dibble.
If it helps the amendment, I support getting it out of there.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Bonnie, did you have any? I was just wondering if council had a response. Is that the existing language?
Ms. Berzofsky.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, this is the exact language that was in the 2009 appropriation for this office. That appropriation also had language about the study, but the study's been done. So
Mr. Chair, in light of that, and if it means that Senator Sandrum will support my amendment, I'm willing to accept that as a friendly amendment.
Senator Sieben, you may want to repeat that.
Chair, we were in council here.
Senator Sandrum, I just said that if this means that you're willing to support my overall amendment, I'm happy to accept that as a friendly amendment, and perhaps we can continue to talk about what the implications would be. But for right now, for all purposes, I'd accept your amendment as a friendly one. hoping that you'll then support my whole amendment.
Or, Mr. Chair, then let's just vote.
Right.
We had a roll call.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say.
Senator Dibble.
To the Salzman language that you mentioned, which, you know, is you know, probably advisable stuff to do. I'm not in love with all the language in there. You know, I've seen it before, of course. But, you know, the folks are going to do that work are in this office. It's no small amount of work that you're asking for in the Salzman language. So, you know, I'm glad you mentioned it because it reminded me. Aha. You know, these are the folks who are going to do that work, and it's good stuff. It's good stuff to ask for, mostly. I mean, I'm not crazy about every element and aspect of it. I'd love to work on that language, but
Mr. Chair,
Senator Central,
and again, just to my amendment, I don't think we should buy an acre, a half an acre, an eighth of an acre of land related to the development of passenger rail until we have our study done, and that's the intent of the amendment. I mean, I just don't think that's wise or proper or necessary.
Okay. We are on the Senjum amendment. Did we have a roll call request in the journal or anything? Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Senjum amendment to the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, now we have before us the A-12 amendment as amended. Any further discussion? We have a roll call requested. There will be a roll call.
Senator Gimsey?
No.
Senator DeCryf?
No.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Gazalka?
No.
Senator Howe? Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Lilly?
No.
Senator Laurie?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
No.
Senator Reinhart? Senator Rest? Senator Senjum?
Yes.
Senator Sharon?
Yes.
Senator Sieben?
Yes.
Senator Wolf?
No.
There being five yeses, seven noes, the motion does not prevail. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I'm going to refer you to page 24 of the bill and offer the A3 amendment.
Senator Sharon offers the A3 amendment.
Section 9 in the middle of page 24 is a license plate bill. It is a bill that Senator Ingebretson brought to this committee that's passed and I understand is moving to the floor of the Senate, but is also... There's also language here. I have talked with Senator Ingebretson, knowing that it was coming under general orders to the floor about adding, inserting the word child, because I had an exact bill to do this, only also included besides legal guardian or sibling, the child of a person who died while serving honorably in active service. And he agreed that at the time that comes to the floor that he would accept this amendment. So I'm offering it to this language tonight as well. And there's not any fiscal implication. We've checked that out.
Good. Any discussion on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to go back to Senator Rest's A18 amendment, and I would like to offer the A18 amendment as amended by Senator Perry.
Senate Counsel, can you back to that and clarify that amendment for us?
Mr. Chair, my understanding of the amendment would be that it's combining some language from A18 and A1, and it would say on page 11, delete lines 23 to 30 and insert, and then it would be the second the second and third clauses on the A18, the 1.10 to 1.14, renumbered. Then the next two lines of the A18 would also be included with the one change on 1.16, where all three is deleted and both is inserted. And actually, that same change has to be made in the A11 as well, because it makes a reference also to all three, so the same change would be made to conform.
We had significant discussion on this amendment previously. I think everybody probably is pretty clear. Senator Gazelka?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question related to that. What effect, then, would that do with the fares?
Page 11, I guess I meant.
Senator Council?
Mr. Zotsky. Mr. Chair, the fares would be number four in order of priority for strategizing. The first would be the council's reserves. The second would be the fund transfer authority. The third would be service cuts, and the fourth would be fare increase.
So the way I understand it, there would be actually four options there, and what we are doing is adding the reserves of the Met Council as one of the options for reducing the possibility of fare increases and for dealing with the general fund reduction. Senator Dibble.
Two things. Mr. Chair, I'd like to request a roll call vote for purposes of publication in the journal.
Three hands. Seeing three. See four hands. And see Mr. five Chair. Hands. Getting late. Senator Dibble.
So we heard a lot of great speeches about preserving systems who are doing a good job, preserving their reserves, reserving their checkbooks. The Met Council has done a great job, and they've been trying to manage, in the face of declining revenues and very volatile sources of revenue. And they're maintaining the very bare minimum set of reserves in their Metro Transit operating reserves that the auditor says is a minimum threshold. So I would just simply remind folks about their very eloquent and passionate speeches, and they felt very deeply about that when they gave those. This kind of flies in the face of that. You know, we're foregoing the opportunity to take a look at a big stockpile of cash sitting, is doing nothing, we're taking that off the table entirely, taking the first take from the Met Council that has put, admittedly, funds into reserve, 8.3% about, for the purpose of managing their cash flow and managing in the face of volatile sources, particularly the MVEST, in the face of, unanticipated or, what may be some anticipated pretty significant increase to their costs in terms of fuel. So just reminding folks about their great speeches.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Sengel.
Mr. Chair, perhaps a question, Senator Connor, does the amendment require that they go? I mean, that they're going to look at fund transfers or reserves first. Doesn't suggest they have to use them, does it?
Ms. Berzosky.
Mr. Chair and Senator Senjum, yes, they would have to use the maximum feasible amount of reserves before they could do the other fund transfers or service reductions or fare increases.
Going down to zero.
So, Ms. Berzosky, this puts that at the top of the list of the options that they would work their way through in dealing with this.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Gazelka.
Does that mean that we would not need a fare increase? I guess that was my original question.
Can anybody answer that? Ms. Boyd? I think that we'd have to do some quick math here, but Ms. Boyd?
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, using the language in the amended amendment, number one would now say use the maximum feasible amount of the council's reserve funds. That would be, according to the Met Council, $17.5 million. The next says exercise the authority granted to the council, that's livable communities and rail fund transfers, The estimates on the low estimates on that at this time is about $18 million, which would be a total of $35 million. The suggested reduction in the bill is $32 million over the biennium.
Senator Lohr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Council, I'm a little unclear as to the terminology maximum feasible and whether their entire reserve would actually be the maximum feasible reserve that would be captured. And is there a definition of that, and is it really all available? I'm just looking for clarification.
Senator Lohr, there has to be a description of that someplace within our statute somewhere.
Well, and so
I've got a description of almost everything. So.
Ms. Berzovsky?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would only say that I don't believe there would be a definition of maximum feasible, and I think that it's a direction to the council. So my assumption is that it would be the council that would have to determine maximum feasible. If maximum feasible means everything, then those words should be deleted.
Right.
Should be. I think it means something, and I think it's up to the council to advise on what it does mean.
Mr. Shetland.
Mr. Chair and members, Judd Shetland with the Met Council. Sorry I was out of the room for just a second when this was coming up, but if the language is regarding the maximum possible, I think that would go back to what the auditor's report is stating as a proper reserve fund balance, and that is the $8.3 million is what they recommend. They said we should be between 8.3 and 12% for our system. And we're at 8.3 right now on the low end of that system as our target. And, in fact, our fund balance right now is about 6%. So I think the maximum possible would be at that at the auditor's recommendation. So we're already short of that right now.
So
this puts a whole new light on Senator Rest's original amendment then.
Exactly.
The longer we talk about this, we ferret out some of the things that we didn't know before. But any other discussion? Senator Lohr.
Well, so then just to be clear, what would be the number one thing would be zero if if maximum feasible is not defined, and it would be left to the discretion of Met Council, and they're already below what the legislative auditor recorded. You know, I mean, I guess just to interpret all that we just heard, it would be zero coming from the first priority there, and then whatever from the livable communities, $13 million, I think you said, something like that. So we still aren't there.
I say, Senator Lohr, we have the sneaky terminology that we are beginning to discover in this original amendment. Yes, I guess that's probably what that means if it is left at this point for the Met Council to interpret. So,
Mr. Chair, I don't even know what it means to me. I was actually really honestly seeking help understanding what it was.
Any other discussion on the amendment?
Senator Wolf renews her motion that the to amend her verbal amendment to amend Senate File 898. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, I had asked for a roll call. We had a show of hands.
I believe you are correct. No. We had a roll call requested. Sorry, Senator Dibble. Roll call was requested.
Senator Gimsey?
Yes.
Senator DeCryf?
Yes.
Senator Dibble?
No.
Senator Gazalka?
Yes.
Senator Howe? Senator Cruz?
Yes.
Senator Lilly?
Yes.
Senator Lohr?
No.
Senator Perry?
Yes.
Senator Reinhart? Senator Rest? Senator Senjum?
Yes.
Senator Sharon? Senator Sieben? Senator Wolf.
Yes.
Senator Sharon, did you get Senator Sharon is here. She was a...
Is it no?
She was a no.
Technical things to it. I wasn't paying attention.
The vote being 8-4 against, the motion prevails.
Just don't for our next committee.
Berezovsky?
Mr. Chair, there were two mistakes that we have found in the bill, and I just wondered if somebody could move that these two corrections. On 16, page 16.17, it refers to the Commissioner of Finance. We would delete finance and insert management and budget. And then on page 25, line 32, we missed one of the extensions on the technology surcharge, so we would, on that line, delete 2013 and insert 2015.
Mr. Chair, I'd love the opportunity to have an amendment adopted, so if I could move those.
So, Senator Lorry moves the technical amendment as proposed by Ms. Berezovsky. Any discussion? Any controversy? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Any more? During the bill, I'd like a roll call. I don't know if that's been asked or not. On the final vote.
Final vote. We will have a roll call. Three hands.
Yes, for publication in the journal.
Will be published in the journal. Okay.
Senator?
Any more amendments? Senator Sharon?
Not an amendment, but I wanted to respond to something from earlier. So are we about ready to take a vote on the final bill? Is that your intent?
It's beginning to look that way.
Okay, great. I wonder if I might have the privilege of speaking to something that was said earlier that I was trying to get a clarification on but didn't get a chance but would like to have it stated on the record.
Certainly. Senator Sharon.
And it just was in relationship to an earlier amendment that was defeated, which was my amendment to utilize a grant evaluation process and criteria instead of the earmarking that was occurring in the bill, in the riders. And I just wanted to respond to offer an alternative perspective about how we use our authority or when we use it in the Senate. I just believe that in response to Senator Perry's statement that the Senate is not using its authority enough in directing the affairs of the state, I would just suggest that I believe that I don't support that thoroughly and totally, because I think there's a distinct and explicit difference between using authority to simply show you have it and using it to allow the development and use of processes that avoid the potential abuse of authority and power over those who don't have power or authority. And we are wise when at times we choose processes like the one the commissioner could use to distribute resources, because it does reduce politicizing, earmarking, reduces arbitrary decision-making by a body of people, and creates a better chance for reasonable decision-making over resources. So thank you for the opportunity at this time to respond to that statement.
Thank you for that. Senator Cruz.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to take an opportunity to thank you and staff for all of the work that you have done on this bill. I praise your creativity and some of the things that we've done, which will hopefully stimulate business. And I know how difficult these cuts were, and I appreciate your efforts towards minimizing while we were trying to meet these difficult budget targets. So thank you for all your hard work.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. You are now my favorite committee member for today. Senator Wolf.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 898, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Senator Dibble.
Well, Mr. Chair, I urge no vote on this bill. I'm sure you're shocked. Even though I got a couple good amendments in, and I appreciate that, and I do actually appreciate your hard work and our ability to work through a couple of issues, and likewise, I think the DFLers showed some real support for stuff that maybe is a little different in the other chamber. So I think we set an example for the legislature how we can have good, freewheeling, and fair debate on these But it doesn't change the fact that the bill does some very serious and, I think, unnecessary damage to parts of our multimodal system, and it's going to have some real consequences and some real harm to individuals' lives and to our businesses and our communities, and it could be avoided. Meanwhile, it holds other parts of our multimodal system completely harmless, adds investments, let them stockpile cash. You know, we continue to build, we continue to advance dollars and build, do lots and lots of support for our roadway infrastructure and our bridge system, our airports, our freight, et cetera. So it's really not the balanced package that I was hoping we could achieve this evening. I'll save, some of these other comments, of course, for later on in the process, but I do hope we have the opportunity to engage the administration more meaningful, engage some of the ideas from our party a little more meaningful, and maybe we'll come up with a really great package that will get unanimous support. We've done that in the past, Mr. Chair, with these transportation bills, so maybe we can do that again.
We have come up with some very good packages in the past, and it would be my hope that we will come up with the best ever package this time. And I'm sure with your help and support in our Senate position, which in the end I'm sure that you'll have some additional comments and input into as we move this through the process. I look forward to that and to working with you to do the best we can within the confines of the targets and everything that I'm sure you understand that we have and that we have to meet. I too want to thank staff, Ms. Berzovsky, Ms. Boyd, Craig Sunday, and also Patrick and Crystal for their help and their patience through this process so far. We have a ways to go yet. It isn't done, but thank you, Senator Cruz, for your acknowledgement of their very good work and helping to make this work so well. I do truly appreciate it, and look forward to continuing this. This is just the beginning of the discussion on transportation, and we will move it forward. So, Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, we need to also thank Amanda Dewar and say farewell to her. She's leaving the service in the Senate, and she's actually going to work for MnDOT next week, Amanda. So she's been tremendous over the years working on transportation, helping all of us figure out which way we're headed and keep us from running in too many circles. So we wish her well and thank her for her great service. And Craig Janicich, right back here, is going to be taking Amanda's place as our partisan council, our partisan advisory.
And we also would need to mention Bob over there at the table. Our thank you very much for your help, too. We don't want to forget anybody. And we're going to forget somebody, just which is the unfortunate part of beginning to name names. And Senator Perry, we want to thank you, too. That being said, we have a roll call requested on Senate file 898. Senator Wolf has recommended that it be as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. We have a roll call.
Senator Gimsey?
Yes.
Senator DeCryf?
Yes.
Senator Dibble?
No.
Senator Gazelka?
Yes.
Senator Howell? Senator Cruz?
Yes.
Senator Lilly?
Yes.
Senator Lori?
No.
Senator Perry?
Yes.
Senator Reinert? Senator Rest? Senator Senjum?
Yes.
Senator Sharon?
No.
Senator Sieben?
No.
Senator Wolf?
Yes.
There being 8 votes in favor, 4 against, the motion prevails, and the bill is passed. There being no further business before the committee, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much for your work, committee.